Welcome to the August 2022 edition of Review Magazine, the Journal of Blind Veterans UK.
From your editor, Liz Miller. Some like it hot. Welcome to your August issue of Review. Well, it's officially summer. I know this because I am, in fact, writing this on the hottest day in the UK ever. Although this means, of course, that much of the country has ground to a halt, the dog is completely out for the count, I'm pleased to share that there is still lots going on in this issue for you. The big news is our CEO Nick Kaplan's recent visit to the Ukraine. Nick was invited there to discuss ways in which we can help the war-blinded and saw firsthand the devastation in the city of Borodyanka. You can hear all about this in the article entitled Beyond Borders. If gaming's your thing, we have news of groundbreaking research by Lancaster University's brilliantly named Department of Imagination. Along with other sight loss organisations, we're helping them take their VI-friendly computer game to the market and would love more members to get involved. All the details of this you can listen to in the article entitled Calling All Gamers. And if it's driving you love, then you'll want to sign up to Driving Week. And you can listen to all the details about this in the news. You better put your foot down, though. Places will go fast. Meanwhile, if you're simply happy to kick back and enjoy the summer, then we have just the stories to help you unwind. In the article, Like Father, Like Son, Ken Hobbs tells the tale of how he followed his father's footsteps, while John Walton remembers learning to fly in the article, I Was Britain's Youngest Pilot. And if you have something burning to share, now's your chance. Having received a number of requests for a letters page, I've decided to give it a go. Sadly, I can only receive letters by email, so please ask your CSW for help if this is tricky. Keep your letter to under 100 words and send it to revieweditor@blindveterans.org.uk. I can't promise to publish everything I receive, but I'll do my very best.
Building capability. Your message from your Chief Executive, Major General Retired Nick Kaplan, CB. I hope this finds you well, and that you are managing the challenges of today with characteristic style and determination. I'm currently watching the temperature dial creeping up the 30s and wondering where it will end. Thank heavens for blinds and water. Last month, I mentioned the change to articles that our trustees were seeking to underpin our support for the people of Ukraine blinded as a result of this dreadful war. I'm happy to report that the Charity Commission agreed to this change in record time, in just 1 week, and so we can now proceed. Throughout this process, we have been keen to stress that our number one priority is, and always will be, our blind veterans, our members. Nothing will distract us from that mission. The change to articles allows us to raise additional funding that enables us to support a broader community. Following on from the Memorandum of Understanding, the government of Ukraine invited me to Kiev to discuss in more detail how we can help. I travelled there at the end of June with Professor Renata Gomez from Bravo Victor and over a 3-day period met with ministers from all the relevant ministries, including health, social policy, defence, veterans and internal affairs. We were briefed on the rehabilitation support that they currently have in their country, which sadly is very little. Post the start of the war in 2014, they did set up a vision rehabilitation capability closer to the eastern regions, known as oblasts, but this has since been destroyed by the Russian forces. We were also briefed on the nature of injury that their people are suffering, which again sadly confirmed our fears that they are experiencing a lot of ocular trauma, mainly as a result of blast injury. So there is much work to be done to help those affected find life beyond sight loss. The concept we have discussed is helping to build the Ukrainian capability for vision rehabilitation, in essence, helping Ukrainia to help Ukrainia. This is consistent with our national concept of international development and is the most assured way of building a capability that will endure. Accordingly, we are now working up a plan which I think will be partly train the trainer, partly face-to-face support, and partly provision of online information and tutorials in Ukrainian. We will be working in partnership with Bravo Victor, who will be helping the Ukrainians understand their past, present and future needs relating to ocular trauma. Research leads to data, which leads to understanding, which leads to solutions that work. It's an exciting opportunity to design an approach to rehabilitation and research that is genuinely mutually supporting. From the Ukrainian perspective, our vision rehabilitation support is a first step in building a rehabilitation system for their country. So we will be setting the foundations for a process that will contribute significantly into the future. During the visit, we were given a glimpse of the horror of war. We laid wreaths at the wall for the fallen, marking every Ukrainian killed in the war between 2014 and 2019, where I was shown the photographs of fallen relatives. We were also shown the site of the former Veteran Rehabilitation Centre at Borodyanka, now utterly destroyed within a town that has been laid to ruin and its people brutalised. What the Russian army did not destroy was the resolve of the Ukrainian people, who will come back stronger still.
Changing lives. Your message from your chairman, Barry Koop. On my recent visit to Arkhangelsk Centre, I was pleased to have the chance to hear some of your views on the new direction we are taking, supporting the war-blinded in Ukraine, in addition to our core work here. The general response was very encouraging, with many saying they felt proud to be part of an organisation making efforts to help the victims of this wretched war. There was a concern raised, though, that this new departure could somehow diminish the support we give you, our members. In response, I would like to take this opportunity to reassure you that it most definitely won't. As you may have heard in the last issue of Review, we are seeking separate funding for any work we do with the Ukrainian Ministry for Veterans Affairs. This means that the money we raise to support our blind veterans in the UK will not be compromised in any way and remains solely for the benefit of our UK members. What's more, those we support in Ukraine will not become members in the traditional sense. So, in contrast to the lifelong support we give you, they will benefit from us as part of a focused program which will run for a fixed amount of time. We are hugely proud of our long tradition of supporting British ex-servicemen and women, and this continues to be our top priority. In fact, we've recently completed a major piece of work to improve our services locally and embarked on a campaign to reach more veterans here who may be entitled to our support. But Sir Arthur Pearson founded this charity in 1915 for one reason: to meet the needs of war-blinded lads coming off the First World War battlefields. And we've now identified this very same need in Ukraine, European country facing an aggressor whose actions are abhorrent. The latest figures show that the number of Ukrainian military personnel with severe facial injuries is rising at a frightening rate. They are in desperate need of specialist rehabilitation and training. So what do we do? Do we look the other way? The British tradition is to lend a helping hand. Having come through the armed forces, I'm sure you would do what you could to support your fellow veterans in their greatest hour of need. To turn our backs at this crucial time when our skills and expertise are so needed would just be wrong. Whatever comes of this work, please rest assured that you will continue to benefit from the charity as you always have done. And on a side note, for any members interested in our wider work who would like to be more involved in decision making, I am currently looking into how we can change the way in which we appoint our vice presidents to make the process more open. I look forward to sharing more about this in the coming months. While I was in Llandudno, I chatted to a lovely member about the mental stress he has experienced since losing his sight. Although he's not out of the woods yet, he couldn't praise the centre staff enough and said the support has helped him enormously. To hear this meant so much to me because when all is said and done, what matters most is that Blind Veterans UK is, as Nick often says, a force for good. I hope we will always continue to strive together to make it so at our centres for well-being, in your local communities, and wherever we are needed most.
News. Community 16 spreads the word on Armed Forces Day. On 25th of June, Community 16 Region 4 team attended the Colchester Military Show to mark Armed Forces Day, writes CSW Neil Hildred. The Colchester Military Show is the largest of its kind in the east of England. This year, it was hosted by 16 Air Assault Brigade Combat Team and attended by around 15,000 people from the wider community. Highlights included an aerial display from the Parachute Regiment's Red Devils, a veteran march past supported by the Band of the British Army, and a demonstration of assault power in the arena by the Parachute Regiment. There were also several major military charity stands alongside military and emergency vehicles and their staff. There was great interest in our charity and the work we do. Our Blind Veterans UK stand was visited by numerous dignitaries, including the leader of Tendring District Council, the Deputy Lord Lieutenant of Essex, Colchester Garrison Commander, and Lieutenant Corporal Louis Cuddy of the Red Devils display team. We were also glad to have the support of one of our members, Roger Breeze, who chatted with the public about his sight loss journey. It was a great day and a fantastic opportunity to spread the word about all that we do. Driving week to take place on the 16th of October at Llandudno. Do you feel the need for speed? Are you looking for a thrilling new driving experience? Then why not join us on the 16th of October at our Llandudno Centre for Driving Week. The week will be full of opportunities for you to get behind the wheel with activities including quad biking, hovercraft, buggies, a track day and a virtual reality experience. You'll also have the chance to visit a transport museum to see vintage vehicles which have been restored to working order. Spaces are limited, so if you'd like to apply, please call the Llandudno Centre on 01492 868 700, Monday to Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The closing date is the 31st of August, and applicants will be informed if they have been successful. You will need a functional level of mobility to attend the week, so you are able to get on a quad bike unassisted. Great John Clock, made in memory of great granddad. Two boys, aged 9 and 6, recently completed our NCP clock in memory of their great grandfather. The project had been sent to member John Maguire, who sadly passed away in April, aged 90. John had planned to make the clock with his great grandsons, Milo and Leon, but never got the chance, so the boys decided to make it by themselves in his honour. Their grandmother Anne, who is John's daughter, said, "Since Dad's funeral, we've been adjusting to life without him. The boys came across the NCP package and wanted to make the clock for him. It now takes pride of place in our home. It became known by the boys as the Great John Clock. In the short time John was a member of Blind Veterans UK, he really enjoyed the creative activities on offer. He loved helping with the Jubilee bunting bag design. We are so grateful for all the support he received. Walking Week is a hit with members. In May, five members took part in Walking Week at Llandudno, writes Paula Sartain from our health and wellbeing team. Walking Week at Llandudno is a great opportunity to kickstart your exercise regime. We not only take you on spectacular walks, but we also share tips on how to identify hazards and overcome them. This is how we spent the week in May. Day one. We started off with a gentle walk up to Abba Falls to see how everyone got on. Most members admitted they hadn't been walking much during lockdown, so we wanted to make sure all the walks we'd planned were suitable. Day two, we walked over the Ponte Sicilit Aqueduct, where at the top, 69 metres up, which is much higher than it sounds, we enjoyed our packed lunches watching the canal boats leisurely navigating the aqueduct. Heaven. The third day was a trek up Mol Famu, a windy, winding route with amazing sweeping views over the Welsh countryside. Day four. This walk was on slightly lower ground as we started off above Prestatyn and walked down through the town to the coast. We enjoyed a welcome view of the sea and a well-deserved ice cream. Day five, to finish, we were taken on a guided tour of the Great Orme and the gun sites and the local history of the Second World War. We ended the day with fish and chips on the prom. All the members said they appreciated the varied and challenging terrains throughout the week. One told me he had an amazing time and felt privileged to be able to share the experience with others, while another said she felt overwhelmed by the care and encouragement she received. We can't wait for Walking Week again next year. Do come and join us to start your walking journey. Construction begins on our Rustington Centre. Construction work is now underway on our new Rustington Centre, and before we can bring our design plans to life, the building is being gutted. This means the site is currently unsafe for visitors. So, as much as we appreciate that many of you would like to pop by for a look, we must ask that you refrain from visiting at this time. We promise to provide updates every step of the way as this exciting project progresses. So watch this space.
A new lease of life. How member Lorna Thomas, 90, found a trusted companion in her Blind Veterans UK volunteer, Chrissy. 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with macular degeneration in both eyes. At first, it wasn't too serious, although it was bad enough for me to give up driving. But last March, my eyesight began to deteriorate much quicker. I felt helpless. I've always been so active and independent ever since I left home at 15. I enlisted into the British Army in 1948 at the age of 17. I joined the Auxiliary Territorial Service, the ATS, and worked as a switchboard operator and decoder. During my time in the Army, I was known as a daredevil and found myself in trouble on numerous occasions. My antics even landed me a headline in the local newspaper on one occasion after I fell from a tower into a pile of ash. I was medically discharged in my early 20s due to health problems. I went on to enjoy a long career in the hospitality industry, which included preparing medieval banquets at a castle. These days, I'm afraid I hardly go out. My sight is very limited as I have no central vision and only a small amount of peripheral vision. This means that I'm aware of movement, but I'm unable to make out what's happening. I haven't been able to continue with the activities I enjoy most, like sewing, knitting, being part of the operatic society and my charity work, so it's been very difficult. And what's made it worse is that the area where I live is only served by one taxi, and it doesn't always run, so I was finding that I was missing appointments and couldn't go out much at all. In fact, during the pandemic, I sat inside for 2 years and lost my confidence. I stopped even wanting to go out, to be honest. I felt my life was coming to an end. It was during a visit from Site Cymru in 2021 that I became aware of Blind Veterans UK and was put in touch with the charity. This was the best thing that's ever happened to me. I've never come across an organisation as caring. The staff bend over backwards for us. At the beginning of this year, I was asked if I'd like some help from Chrissy, who volunteers for the charity. Chrissy's been volunteering for 3 years and is herself a member of the military family, having served in the Royal Navy for 26 years. She helps me get to appointments, and we also go out to the shops and for a bite to eat. Now, I really look forward to Tuesdays when she comes. She's a little treasure to me. Nothing is too much trouble. I really don't know what I would do without her. I feel like we've formed a partnership, and I'm just so comfortable in her company. It's like we've always known each other. Chrissy says, being a veteran myself means there is a natural camaraderie between myself and Lorna. We hit it off straight away and have so much in common. In fact, since we've been meeting up, I've actually discovered that I served alongside her niece. Supporting Lorna is incredibly rewarding. She's told me that she didn't realise how isolated she was until I began to help her. None of us knows what's around the next corner, and I'd like to think that someone would support me in my hour of need. If you have a story to share about how the charity is helping you, please email it to revieweditor, or one word, at blindveterans.org.uk, or let your CSW know.
Beyond Borders. Our CEO, Nick Kaplan, spent Armed Forces Week in Ukraine to discuss how we can help the war-blinded. In June, Blind Veterans UK took its first concrete steps towards extending its support to war-blinded people in Ukraine. Our CEO, Nick Kaplan, was invited to the country to meet with officials at the request of the Ukrainian government, along with Renata Gomez, Chief Scientific Officer of our sister charity, Bravo Victor. Both charities have made a declaration to support Ukraine with research and sight loss rehabilitation services. On his return, Nick said, earlier this month, the Charity Commission approved the required changes in our Articles of Association to allow Blind Veterans UK to respond to broader needs. This was a significant first step and one we must now take forward to support the people of Ukraine. Our role will be to ensure a long-lasting and self-sufficient service for the Ukrainians by building on the knowledge and capability on the ground. We will be providing training to upskill their health professionals, providing vision rehabilitation support to Ukrainian veterans and their families, and providing resources and material to assist the delivery of vision rehabilitation in Ukraine. Meanwhile, Renata said, having now visited Ukraine and met with officials at the request of the Ukrainian government, I'm absolutely certain that our experience in this area would make a significant difference to soldiers and civilians with sight loss, visual impairment, and other disabilities suffered as a result of the war. Against a backdrop of heavy rocket fire in Kiev during UK Armed Forces Week, the representatives met with Ukrainian ministers to progress talks to build a world-class holistic research and rehabilitation model combining physical and mental rehabilitation for veterans living with blindness and other impairments. The delegation visited Borodyanka and Irpin on the 25th of June, which is the UK's Armed Forces Day, with the Ukraine Deputy Minister for Veteran Affairs, Julia Laputina. Local veterans, military personnel and families shared their heartbreaking stories of the war, as well as their appreciation for the support of our charities. The town, which was devastated by military attacks in March, is home to the Ukrainian Veterans Rehabilitation Centre, now a ruin. Once rebuilt, it is hoped that work carried out at the centre by Bravo Victor will produce research, analysis and evidence to help understand the past, present and future needs of veterans and those living with disability, while providing a unique platform for international collaboration. One key message from the trip was that Ukraine want the world to learn from their experience. Laputina emphasised the importance of this, saying the Borodyanka Centre is a solution and with the support of our foreign partners will render help to more people soon. We must create the scientific research as an integrated part of the centre. We will invite scientists from all over the world with expertise in physiology, anthropology, criminology, psychology and psychiatry to research, study and document the wounds that have been inflicted on our population. It will be a combination of a humanitarian mission and a mission of providing rehabilitation services, a truly holistic approach.
Like father, like son, our volunteer, John Parsons, shares the story of two generations of World War heroes in one family, member Ken Hobbs and his father, William. William Hobbs was a natural mechanic, skilled and professional, and these qualities were inherited by his son, Ken. Ken recently told me, "I've always loved driving, working with and repairing vehicles. I almost feel as if I was born in a motor and my dad was the same." However, there were some things William never talked about to Ken, and chief among these were his experiences in the Great War. This, he judged, was not a fit subject for conversation. Ken did learn a few details, though. He knew, for example, that his dad was honoured by the French with the Croix de Guerre for his service. This was one of the highest awards for gallantry given by France from 1915 onwards, reserved only for those who distinguished themselves by acts of heroism involving combat with the enemy. Although the exact circumstances of William's bravery are unknown, a handwritten citation dated the 26th of June 1918 shares some clues. It refers to Section Sanitaire Anglaise, number 16, which states that William was an ambulance driver and describes how he removed wounded men from the battlefield with a remarkable disregard for danger, going day and night up to the most advanced posts, not troubling about the bombardment or state of the roads. Ken doesn't know much more than this, apart from a few snippets, one of which concerned a lucky escape. William revealed that on one occasion, an ambulance he had been driving just moments before was blown up. Remarkably, Ken had almost the exact same experience himself in the Second World War. One day, he had been out making deliveries when an attack took place. He said, "I was able to get out of my lorry just before it was blown up." Fortunately, the 99-year-old is still going strong. He shared that when he volunteered for the Royal Army Service Corps in January 1942, he had actually been hoping to join his cousin in the Navy. His plans changed when he was told that no ships were available and the army needed good drivers straight away. The decision was made. After basic training in Huthwaite, Northamptonshire, which involved a lot of foot slogging, Ken was soon driving all over England. For over 2 years, he delivered, fetched and carried essential cargoes for the war effort right up until June 5th, 1944. The following day, on the 6th, he took part in the D-Day invasion At 7:30 in the morning on that fateful day, he drove his vehicle onto Sword Beach and remembers it was very noisy. He says he met a Frenchman at the top of the beach who said, "Hello, Tommy, I knew you'd come back one day." Ken drove back and forth, close to the front line, moving ammunition, fuel and materials for roads and bridges as they were needed. He drove through France, on to Holland, and finally to victory in Germany. Just after the war ended, and while he was still serving, a terrible accidental fire took his left eye. This didn't stop Ken from driving, though. After leaving the army in 1947, he went on to get a job as a bus driver. Incredibly, in 2016, some 72 years after D-Day, Ken was surprised to find himself recognised by the French government. He was awarded the Chevalier de l'Ordre National de la Légion d'Honneur, France's highest order of merit, first established by Napoleon Bonaparte in 1802. He told me the presentation was a great honour and I was very surprised to receive the medal. My three sons came along and it was a very special day. Ken found the recognition even more special because he was following in his father's footsteps. It must be a rare thing for the French government to recognise a father and son who both served in a world war as an essential driver and survived a similar attack. William and Ken, father and son, heroes to the French, heroes to us all.
Calling all gamers. Mesh team lead Ashley Lee is looking for members to take part in groundbreaking computer game research. Earlier this year, Lancaster University's Department of Imagination contacted fellow sight loss charity Sight Advice South Lakes, SASL, asking them to help produce what could be the world's first audio-only computer game designed by people with sight loss. Of course, SASL thought this was an excellent idea and got in touch with us and other sight loss organisations around the country to find a group of vision-impaired people with an interest in gaming who could help. After several Zoom meetings, all the gamers were brought together for a workshop in Manchester. They tested the prototype game, which has no visual display or voices, only sounds to navigate through the game, and also designed the outline of a new game. A couple of great things have come out of the workshop. Firstly, Lancaster University has been awarded more money to take their game to the market in the next few months. Once the game is produced, all the participating organisations will be credited and any profit will be shared between them. Secondly, the project has been nominated for an Inspire Award, hosted by sight loss organisation Visionary. The award, sponsored by Specsavers, showcases trailblazing new ideas and the winner will be announced in September. If you would like to get involved in the next phase of this exciting project, please get in touch. You don't need to be a gaming expert, but you do need to be interested and have some level of sight loss and be open to new ideas. For more information, please contact Ashley on 0114 212 7631.
And breathe. Our people officer, Emily Edwards, explores the practice of mindfulness. Have you ever felt fully present in the moment? Maybe you were listening to music, enjoying time with friends, or just engrossed in a good book. Well, these days, many people are turning to mindfulness to achieve this kind of expansive state. A form of meditation, mindfulness is a practice of focusing the mind and is said to have multiple health benefits, including helping to reduce anxiety, increase a sense of calm and boost our overall health and well-being. According to Health and Wellbeing provider Health Assured, Mindfulness is a state of openness through focusing on the right here, right now. It's about stepping out of those thoughts and emotions we often get wrapped up in by bringing ourselves back to the present moment. This doesn't necessarily mean we need to rid ourselves of our thoughts or feelings. It's just about not letting them take over. We simply pay attention to our experience of life as it unfolds, simply observing without judgment. How to practice? When you sit down to meditate, you probably find that your mind tends not to sit still for long. That's okay. This is the mind's natural state, and the reason many mindfulness meditations will use a gentle anchor, like the breath, to bring you back to the here and now. Get comfortable. There's no right or wrong way to sit in meditation. Just find a position that feels comfy to you. It could be a chair, or on your bed, or on the ground, sitting up or lying down. You might find it helpful to sit with your feet flat on the floor, as it can help you ground you in the now. Close your eyes. Get ready to meditate by letting your eyelids close, or you can keep them just open and just relax your eyes, whichever feels better. Breathe naturally. Don't try to control your breath. Just let it come and go as it is. Focus your attention on your breathing. Focus your mind on the in-breath and the out-breath. Notice the sensations in your body. Pay attention to where you feel the breath most clearly. This could be your belly, your nostrils, or your chest. Gently bring it back to the breath. As you find your mind wandering, notice the sensation or thought and let it go. Then simply bring it back to the in-breath and the out-breath without judgment. The wandering mind. Don't worry if your mind keeps trailing off on a train of thought or you become caught up in reoccurring thoughts. The fact that you've noticed your mind wandering is actually a good thing, as it means you're gaining awareness. The important thing is to try not to judge or criticize yourself. Meditation can help release you from the grips of the inner critic that drains self-worth. Simply recognize that your mind has wandered, and return your focus to the steady, stable breath. Rise to take on the moment as it arises. Make it a habit. With regular practice, you should start to feel the benefits. Why not try it for just 2 minutes every other day, then build up to 3 minutes and even 4? After all, mindfulness might not stop the waves of life from pulling us in all directions, but it might be able to teach us how to ride them and live with a little more ease.
Okay. An incredible week. In May, 3 of our members and their families attended the 2nd annual Veteran Games 2022 at Tel Aviv in Israel. Participant Clive Jones shares his experience. On the 28th of May, Blind Veterans UK members Kelly, Peter and myself travelled to Israel along with our families and working age member case manager Glynis for the 2nd annual Veteran Games. Disabled veterans from the Israeli Defence Force and the UK Armed Forces went head to head in tough but friendly competition in a range of sports including swimming, marksmanship and cross training. The focus of the Games is to promote friendship and healthy competition between the British and our Israeli counterparts. Approximately 160 members of the British contingent attended, and veterans of varying disabilities and abilities gave their all during the 3 days of competition. Both Kelly and Peter threw themselves into all the sports they could, achieving many personal bests, while I stood there shaking my head, wondering where they got their energy from. Meanwhile, I took part in the 50-metre breaststroke, which was a challenge as I hadn't been in a pool for years. I completely lost my confidence when I lost my sight. Amazingly, I won. I felt proud to be presented with my gold medal by Leo Doherty MP, the current UK Minister for Defence, People and Veterans, who was there to explore rehabilitation services. When we weren't competing, we were visiting places and enjoying the wonderful food and occasional glass of wine. We were given tours of Tel Aviv with our families, where we were able to take in the history of the city and enjoy a cuisine tour while the kids were taken on a graffiti tour. We were also taken on a trip to Jerusalem and given the chance to explore the city at length, the Wailing Wall, Temple Mount, and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And we enjoyed a trip to the Dead Sea, a drive into the desert, and dinner under the stars in Bedouin tents, where the bongo drums certainly gave the night a party atmosphere. If that wasn't enough, the Veterans Games teams hosted a pool party, another day by the sea where the participants were challenged to try surfing, paddleboarding and kayaking, all fully inclusive activities. We were made to feel very welcome everywhere we went. Amidst all the fun, the heart of the trip was about challenging ourselves to explore what we can do despite our disabilities. We also reflected on our similar journeys and what binds us all. This felt particularly significant at the ceremony of remembrance at Ramla Military Cemetery, which contains over 5,000 graves from conflicts dating back to the First World War. It was an incredible week, and we were all gratefully appreciative of the opportunity to attend. Israel is a phenomenal country, and competing in the Games has given not only me but my whole family the opportunity to see it. On behalf of us all, I would like to thank Blind Veterans UK for making this wonderful trip possible and for all the support we received from staff along the way. I left the Games with a newfound focus to get back into the pool regularly, exercise more and shed a little timber.
How to make raspberry cordial. Is there anything more refreshing than a homemade fruit cordial on a hot summer day? Pretty much any fruit can be used for cordial, but we think the best to go in for is the summer raspberries or strawberries or black currants. This is how you make a delicious raspberry cordial. Your ingredients: you'll need 500 grams of raspberries, 500 grams of caster sugar, and 3 tablespoons of red wine vinegar. Step 1. Put the raspberries in a pan with the sugar and vinegar. Mash over a low heat for 10 minutes until smooth and syrupy. Rub through a sieve to clean into a clean pan. Step 2. Tip the seeds from the sieve into a bowl and stir in 300 mils of water. Then sieve again to remove the last of the pulp from the seeds. Pour the liquid into the pan with the sieved pulp, stir well and boil for 1 minute. Pour into small, sterilised bottles and store in the fridge. Add to water and ice for a refreshing long drink, or top up with Prosecco or champagne for a summer fizz. Yum!
A friend in need. Our member experience coordinator, Stacey Barham, reports on the activities on offer to help carers connect. As the famous author Ray Bradbury once said, we cannot tell the precise moment when friendship is formed. As in filling a vessel drop by drop, there is at last a drop which makes it run over. So in a series of kindnesses, there is at least one which makes the heart run over. I've been fortunate enough to facilitate many carers groups at Blind Veterans UK over the past few years and witness lots of new friendships blossom. Sometimes the process is drop by drop, but other times it can seem more like a waterfall, an instant connection driven by the relief of knowing that the other person truly understands. These friendships really do make all the difference. So to mark the International Day of Friendship on the 30th of July, I wanted to share the groups and activities we offer our members, carers. If you would like to get to know others in the same situation as you, signing up to one or more of these is a great place to start. There are many local get-togethers for carers through both Blind Veterans UK and your local carers centre. Contact your community support worker for more information about these. We hold regular coffee mornings for carers at our Brighton Centre, giving you the opportunity to get to know one another in a relaxed setting. To find out more, simply contact me via the details that I'll give at the end of this article. Our online carers group meets regularly for discussions and emotional support. To find out more, contact our working age case manager, Glynis, by calling 07715 607 483 or emailing Glynis, that's G-L-Y-N-I-S, .Gillam, G-I-L-L-A-M, at blindveterans.org.uk. For those on social media, you can join our carers Facebook group by searching Blind Veterans UK Family and Carers. This is a closed group, so we have a simple process for welcoming new members. If you would like to join, simply click Ask for Invite, and we will ask you about your connection to the charity before we accept you to the group. We recently started holding day breaks for carers at our Brighton Centre to provide much needed respite, connection, support, and a change of scenery. At the most recent one, the group spent the morning getting to grips with macrame, a textile craft perfect for plant hangers, bags and wall hangings, then enjoyed a laughter-filled lunch and a yoga session. They also received tips on dealing with the aches and pains that come from carrying out caring duties. If you'd like to come to the next one, get in touch. On Wednesday the 24th August at 11 a.m, we'll be launching our very first monthly virtual exercise session for carers, tailored to suit all abilities. The aim is to give you a boost and help you find time for physical activity, and the session will include a mix of exercises which can be taken at your own pace. To find out more, please email our sports and recreation instructor at Teresa, T-H-E-R-E-S-A dot Farley, F-A-R-L-E-Y, at blindveterans.org.uk, or call her on 01273 307 811. Before your first session, Teresa will contact you to check your medical needs and help make sure you know how to log on. We hope to see you there. And what would you like to hear on a carer's page? Contact Stacey Barham on 01273 391 483 or at Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y dot Barham, B-A-R-H-A-M, at blindveterans.org.uk.
National Creative Project Programme. This month's creative activities and hobby circles you can take part in, all from the comfort of your own home. The following activities are available to all our members, whatever your experience or creative ability. Just call us on 01273 391 455 for a pack. Craft. Jubilee Crown Mosaic. This is a chance to create your own decorative mosaic in the shape of a majestic crown to celebrate the Queen's Platinum Jubilee year. We'll send you everything you need to make this easy, fun, and colourful design. The wooden base measures roughly 7 by 8 inches or 18 by 20 centimetres, and there is no need for any tile cutting as all the pieces are ready to use. The project comes with the opportunity to join one of our monthly mosaic hobby circles to chat with other members and receive support if you would like to. Battle of Britain Plains wooden models. We'll send you everything you need to complete wooden models of a Lancaster and a Spitfire, including our visually impaired friendly instructions. These are fun and challenging kits with pre-cut wooden pieces which you sand, slot together and glue. The Lancaster has a wingspan of 19 inches or 49 centimetres, and the Spitfire is 13 inches or 33 centimetres, and paint will be included for those of you who want to paint the finished models. The project also comes with the opportunity to join one of our monthly woodwork hobby circles. Gardening. We have a new gardening project for you in your September issue of the review. Art. Watercolour for beginners and improvers, June, July and August. Would you like to brush up your skills in watercolour painting or simply have a go? We'll send you a set of watercolour paints and painting essentials and 4 ideas to help you get started under the general theme of travel. We know watercolour painting can be challenging, so we urge you to put the notion of perfection to one side, make some strokes, and just see what happens. The project pack contains good advice on how to get the most out of the medium. If you'd like to share your results with us for inclusion in the review or our online gallery, you can send your paintings using the return label, and we'll take some high quality photos of them. We would also love to see photos of you in the act of painting. When you register, please do let us know if you would benefit from the audio version of our instructions on a USB stick. And if you'd like to discuss this activity, please register for the Painting Hobby Circle. Creative Hobby Circles. We would love to hear from you on 01273 391 455 if you are interested in joining a monthly telephone or video call chat group in any of the following creative topics: gardening, knitting, wood turning, mosaic, painting, woodwork, or creative writing. Our chat groups have up to 6 fellow members plus 2 of our staff. We also have a photography Facebook page at Blind Veterans UK Photography and a fortnightly chat group with regular guest speakers. Anyone with an interest in photography is welcome, no matter what your experience. You can find more information at blindveterans.org.uk/NCP. If you would like to try one of any of the projects or groups mentioned, please give us a call on 01273 391 455 or speak to your community support worker. Our NCP web pages are being reviewed and revamped over the summer, so you may find a holding page in place of the usual pages. Don't worry, full service will be resumed soon. In the meantime, we look forward to seeing your photos and hearing your feedback on the latest projects.
Family news, birthdays. Josephine Donaldson, who celebrates her 101st birthday on the 5th of August. Elizabeth Ann Neal, who celebrates her 100th birthday on the 9th of August. Samuel Apps, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 12th of August. Kathleen Birchall, who celebrates her 101st birthday on the 13th of August. Sydney Podd, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 17th of August. Brian Sibree, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 21st of August. Michael Jones, who celebrates his 101st birthday on the 22nd of August. John Morton, who celebrates his 102nd birthday on the 30th August. And Leslie Dean, who celebrates his 100th birthday on the 3rd of September. And all birthday information was correct at the time of going to press. Condolences. It is with deep regret that we record the deaths of the following, and we offer our heartfelt condolences. Jennifer Margaret Hook, who died on the 1st of June 2022, she was the wife of Stephen Hook. Joyce Kirby, who died on the 6th of July 2022, she was the wife of Graham Kirby. June Rayner, who died on the 7th of June 2022, she was the wife of Alan Rayner. And Hazel Walsham, who died on the 3rd of June 2022, she was the wife of David Walsham. In memory, it is with deep regret that we record the deaths of the following members, and we offer our heartfelt condolences to their widows, widowers, families and friends. Angus Abel of Kirkcaldy Fife died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 83. He served as a gunner in the Royal Artillery. Barbara Adams of Hartlepool, Cleveland died on the 15th of June 2022, aged 90. She served as a driver in the Women's Royal Army Corps. Ivor Richard Adkins of Cardigan Dufford died on the 13th of May 2022, aged 87. He served as an acting corporal in the Royal Air Force. Clarence Edgar Atfield of Hereford died on the 30th of May 2022, aged 95. He served as a sergeant in the Worcester Regiment. Brian William Baish of Cambridge died on the 23rd of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a sergeant in the Royal Artillery. Eric Barrett of Bournemouth, Dorset died on the 12th of June 2022, aged 99. He served as a corporal in the Royal Air Force. Colin Stanley Bennett of Tintagel, Cornwall died on the 10th of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. James Blake of Portsmouth, Hampshire died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 95. He served as a corporal in the Royal Air Force. David Bernard Brown of Lydney, Gloucestershire, died on the 9th of July 2022, aged 87. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Brian Chant of Bridport, Dorset, died on the 25th of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Signals. Kenneth Arthur Coggin of South Ockenden, Essex, died on the 18th of June 2022, aged 87. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Army Service Corps. Raymond Donnelly of Edinburgh died on the 5th of June 2022, aged 74. He served as a Lieutenant Commander in the Royal Naval Reserve. Tony Kendall Doyle of Gloucester died on the 1st of July 2022, aged 79. He served as a leading ordnance electrical mechanic in the Royal Navy. Bernard East of Wilmslow, Cheshire died on the 30th of May 2022, aged 93. He served as an aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. William Lancelot Elliott of Wellington, Somerset, died on the 6th of June 2022, aged 85. He served as a private in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. John Evans of St Albans, Hertfordshire, died on the 3rd of July 2022, aged 98. He served as a gunner in the Royal Artillery. Handel Sidney Everett of Bournemouth, Dorset, died on the 5th of June 2022, aged 98. He served as a musician in the Royal Tank Corps. Arthur James IV of Wellingborough, Northamptonshire, died on the 5th of July 2022, aged 98. He served as a corporal in the King's Own Scottish Borderers. Edwin Alan Frost of Mold, Flintshire, died on the 9th of June 2022, aged 86. He served as a senior aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Royston James Fulham of Bristol died on the 24th of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a private in the Royal Armoured Corps, 17th and 21st Lancers. Geoffrey Gamester of Spalding, Lincolnshire, died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a leading electrical mechanic in the Royal Navy. Graham Blair Gillespie of Neston, Cheshire, died on the 7th of June 2022, aged 85. He served as a trooper in the Royal Armoured Corps. Thomas Gilmore of Glasgow, Lanarkshire, died on the 19th of June 2022, aged 95. He served as a sergeant in the Royal Army Service Corps. John Alec Greaves of Redcar, Cleveland, died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a senior aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Linda Maureen Griffin of Cheltenham, Gloucestershire, died on the 14th of June 2022, aged 97. She served as a Woman's Home Guard Auxiliary in the Home Guard. William Habergham of Skegness, Lincolnshire, died on the 29th of June 2022, aged 74. He served as a private in the Prince of Wales Own Regiment. Constance Halford Thompson of London died on the 7th of July 2022, aged 95. She served as a sergeant in the Burma Regiment. David Gerald Hancock of Beckenham, Greater London, died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 89. He served as an acting sergeant in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. John Raymond Hawkes of Ipswich, Suffolk, died on the 10th of June 2022, aged 94. He served as an aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Brian Hill of Bedford died on the 19th June 2022, aged 93. He served as an aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Thomas Harry Holmes of Lytham St Anne's, Lancashire, died on the 2nd of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Army Catering Corps. Edward Inglesby of Liverpool, Merseyside, died on the 23rd of June 2022, aged 82. He served as a corporal in the Army. Elizabeth Ingram of Southport, Merseyside, died on the 28th of May 2022, aged 99. She served as a leading aircraft woman in the Women's Royal Air Force. Royston Carter Jones of Newport, Isle of Wight, died on the 3rd of June 2022, aged 89. He served as a Lance Bombardier in the Royal Artillery. John Alfred Jones of Wolverhampton, West Midlands, died on the 19th of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a leading aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. Donald Ian McLean of Broxbourne, West Lothian, died on the 7th of June 2022, aged 82. He served as a Lance Bombardier in the Royal Artillery. Charles Barry Mann of Daventry, Northamptonshire, died on the 21st of June 2022, aged 91. He served as a private in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. Donald George Charles May of Mansfield, Nottinghamshire, died on the 18th of June 2022, aged 80. He served as a private in the Worcestershire Foresters Regiment. Thomas Ian Charles Mackenzie of Leamington Spa, Warwickshire, died on the 6th of June 2022, aged 96. He served as a lieutenant in the Royal Engineers. Sylvia Harvey Musgrave of Bristol died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 97. She served as a Lance Corporal in the Auxiliary Territorial Service. David Nicholas of Haverford West, Defford, died on the 18th of June 2022, aged 87. He served in the Royal Air Force. Ian Murray Ogston of Blairgowrie, Perthshire, died on the 20th of June 2022, aged 98. He served as a telecommunications mechanic in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers. Dennis Ernest Oliver of Hornchurch, Essex, died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 96. He served as an able seaman in the Royal Navy. Douglas Owen of Plymouth, Devon, died on the 15th of June 2022, aged 101. He served as an able seaman in the Royal Navy. Alan Parker of Colchester, Essex, died on the 6th of June 2022, aged 95. He served in the Home Guard. Roy Stanley Perry of Bembridge, Isle of Wight, died on the 20th of June 2022, aged 87. He served as a junior technician in the Royal Air Force. James Ernest Phillips of Peterborough, Cambridgeshire, died on the 2nd of July 2022, aged 99. He served as a driver in the Royal Army Service Corps. Evan Richard Roberts of Liverpool, Merseyside, died on the 2nd of June 2022, aged 95. He served as a Lance Bombardier in the Royal Artillery. Dennis William Robinson of Wallingham, Surrey, died on the 13th of June 2022, aged 92. He served as a sapper in the Royal Engineers. Doreen Eva Scheuer of Virginia Water, Surrey, died on the 1st of July 2022, aged 99. She served as a corporal in the Women's Auxiliary Air Force. Thomas John Carl Schouler of Abergavenny, Gwent, died on the 25th of June 2022, aged 89. He served as a private in the Home Counties Brigade, Royal West Kent Regiment. Peter John Skelton of Spalding, Lincolnshire, died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 88. He served as a leading seaman in the Royal Navy. Edward Seymour Smith of Liverpool, Merseyside, died on the 14th of June 2022, aged 92. He served as a private in the South Lancashire Regiment, the Prince of Wales Volunteers. Thomas Benjamin Southern of Watchet, Somerset, died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 87. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Engineers. Muriel Josephine Tallentire of Lincoln died on the 1st of July 2022, aged 99. She served as a leading aircraft woman in the Women's Royal Air Force. Donald Taylor of Bolton died on the 3rd of June 2022, aged 88. He served as a gunner in the Royal Artillery. William Taylor of Birmingham West Midlands died on the 5th of June 2022, aged 96. He served as a Lance Bombardier in the Royal Artillery. David Thomas of Llandudno, Conwy, died on the 1st of July 2022, aged 84. He served as a seaman in the Royal Navy. Douglas Ernest Thorpe of Bedford died on the 30th of May 2022, aged 92. He served as a private in the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry. Annie Irene Tipton of Telford, Shropshire, died on the 24th of June 2022, aged 94. She served as a Lance Corporal in the Auxiliary Territorial Service. Brian Tunner of Oldham, Lancashire, died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 77. He served as a trooper in the King's Royal Hussars. Ian Upton of Wimborne, Dorset, died on the 2nd of July 2022, aged 59. He served as a commander in the Royal Navy. Marjorie Winifred Wakeford of Sutton Coalfield, West Midlands, died on the 1st of June 2022, aged 105. She served as a leading aircraft woman in the Women's Royal Air Force. Robert Walls of Stockton-on-Tees, Cleveland, died on the 28th of June 2022, aged 86. He served as a private in the Royal Signals. Tony Whittaker of Buxton, Derbyshire, died on the 6th of June 2022, aged 89. He served as a flying officer in the Royal Air Force. John White of Welshpool Powys died on the 18th of May 2022, aged 86. He served as a Lance Corporal in the Royal Lincolnshire Regiment. Kenneth Pierce Williams of Abergele, Conwy, died on the 15th of June 2022, aged 88. He served as a senior aircraftman in the Royal Air Force. David Frederick Woodruff of Swindon, Wiltshire, died on the 17th of June 2022, aged 88. He served as a sapper in the Royal Engineers. And Albert James Wright of Abingdon, Oxfordshire, died on the 2nd of June 2022, aged 99. He served as a Flight Lieutenant Wing Commander in the Royal Air Force. I was Britain's youngest pilot. Member John Walton, 89, shares his story of learning to fly at just 17 and joining Blind Veterans UK in later life. At 7 o'clock on an early spring morning in 1950, a young Air Training Corps, ATC cadet, set off from his home in Newlyn, Cornwall, to RAF White Waltham near Maidenhead for an interview. At the age of 15, after gaining his glider pilot's licence, his commanding officer had told him about a new scholarship scheme allowing selected cadets to fly powered aircraft. He could not apply quickly enough. I'm writing about him because it feels like a different lifetime now. That lad was, in fact, me. After the medical came the interview, and I was shown into an office where the group captain was seated. He introduced himself, and I was thrilled to find he was one of my wartime heroes, the legendary Cat's Eyes Cunningham, Britain's top-scoring night fighter ace. I was in awe. It was difficult to answer his questions at first, until he put me at ease. I was told that I would hear within a fortnight if I'd been successful, and was sent home to wait. I met the postman every day until finally he thrust a buff envelope into my hand, asking, "Is this what you're waiting for?" I jumped for joy when I opened it. I had been awarded a scholarship. I started my training at Plymouth and District Aero Club at Roeborough. This was when I was introduced to Flight Lieutenant Lockwood, who would be my instructor, and to the Tiger Moth biplane, GAHVV, which I would soon be flying. Although the weather was poor, the Moth was pushed out onto the tarmac. Mr. Lockwood talked through what was expected of me and gave me the course books I needed to study for a private pilot's licence. The following day, I was taught how to perform the exterior inspections of the aircraft. Then, at last, we climbed in and went through all the start-up and pre-flight checks before we set off for my first experience under dual instruction. I had to learn how to taxi the Moth because it's flown from the rear seat and there is no view immediately in front. There is no rear wheel, only a metal skid and no brakes. I taxied it to the end of the field, then, with my hands and feet on the controls to follow his movements, Mr. Lockwood took off, talking me through everything he was doing. In those days, communication between instructor and pupil was by means of a simple speaking tube. There was no radio for external communication from the aircraft, so a careful study of the signal square markings on the tarmac was necessary before landing. We flew this way a few times more until one day he uttered those never-to-be-forgotten words, "You have control, don't bend her." He climbed out. This was the moment. I looked at his empty seat, took a deep breath, lined her up and opened the throttle. I didn't have time to be scared. I circled the field and made a good landing. I had made my first solo flight after just 8 hours of dual instruction. Over the next weeks, I was taught aerobatics and forced landings, and I also flew cross-country to Weston-super-Mare and on to Filton in Bristol, where I taxied literally under the nose of the world's biggest aircraft at that time, the Bristol Brabazon, and then to Exeter, where I landed behind 3 Spitfires before heading home. I was granted my private pilot's licence, number 33146, on the 29th of June 1951, aged 17, thus becoming Britain's youngest pilot at that time. Within 12 months, I'd enrolled in the RAF and volunteered for aircrew training. After restoring old photographs some years ago, my curiosity was sparked as to whether the vintage aircraft was still in existence. So after trying various means, bingo, I found it on the internet. I travelled to see it with my son, but unfortunately arrived too late as someone had crashed it. By this time, I was widowed and had recently lost my sight. The first eye was due to a history of glaucoma, then cataracts, and a mistake by a surgeon. The other went very suddenly when I was in my early 80s. One minute I was watching the rugby on TV with my son, and the next I was in darkness, completely black blind. However, two fantastic things came from this. Firstly, I met a wonderful eye surgeon called Mr. Tu, who was determined to help me. And secondly, I joined Blind Veterans UK. Although Mr. Tu's first attempt at a corneal transplant didn't work, he kept in touch with me and a few years later asked if he could try again. 3 weeks after the second surgery, I was invited to the Llandudno Centre for my introductory week. There had been no change in my sight, so I just assumed that was that. The surgery hadn't worked again. But then on day 4 of my stay, the nurse came in to wake me and pulled the curtains back. Amazingly, I could perceive a likeness in the room. I walked to the window and could see the vague outline of a tree outside. It was like a miracle. Word soon spread around the centre, of course, and as I walked into the dining room for breakfast, I was greeted with applause. It was incredibly emotional. That whole week, I felt surrounded by love. I will never forget it. So, I have a little sight now. Not enough to identify faces, but I can see shapes and shadows. I was taught how to use a white cane at Llandudno, so now venture out on my own. The first time was frightening because I got a bit lost, but it gets easier. I love the independence it gives me. I'd like to finish with a special thanks to my Blind Veterans UK volunteer, Brenda, whose support really makes all the difference. Being referred to this charity was one of the best things to have ever happened to me, and I couldn't be more grateful for all the support I've received. Quiz time. Our quizmaster, Ron Russell, tests your knowledge on well-known nursery rhymes. So I will read out the question first, have a space, and then I'll read the answer. So question one, what was Polly asked to do? A, put her shoes on. B, put the kettle on. C, put the cooker on. And the answer is B, put the kettle on. Number two, what pet did old Mother Hubbard have? A, a goldfish. B, a cat. C, a dog. And the answer is C, a dog. Number three, where was Simple Simon going when he met the pie man? A, to church. B, for a swim. C, to the fair. And the answer is C, to the fair. Number four, what was the second creature to be swallowed by the old lady who swallowed a fly? And the answer, spider. Number five, who did I meet on my way to St. Ives? The answer, a man with 7 wives. Number six, rub-a-dub-dub, 3 men in a tub, the butcher, the baker, and who? The answer, the candlestick maker. Number seven, what did Yankee Doodle stick in his hat? A, a feather. B, a brooch. C, a flower. And the answer, a flower. Number eight, 5 little ducks went swimming one day. How many came back in the end? And the answer, 5. Number nine, how many bags of wool did Bar Bar Black Sheep have? A, 4. B, 6. C, 3. And the answer, 3. The last one, number 10. And who were the bags for? And the answer, one for the master, one for the dame, and one for the little boy who lives down the lane. Contact details. Contact address, Blind Veterans UK, 3 Queen Square, London, W1N3AR. Telephone number 0300 111 2233. Member Support Hub, MESH, telephone number 01273 391 447. New members. Anyone who may be eligible to join Blind Veterans UK can phone our membership department on free phone 0800 389 7979. The Brighton Centre, telephone number 01273 307 811. The Llandudno Centre, telephone number 01492 868 700. Review Editor, telephone number 0207 616 8367, or the email address revieweditor, all one word, at blindveterans.org.uk. To give us feedback on any of our services, please email us at supporter.services@blindveterans.org.uk or call telephone number 0300 111 2233. To make a donation, simply call that same number 0300 111 2233, or visit the website blindveterans.org.uk/donate. To listen to review on Alexa, the command is Alexa, ask TuneIn to play Blind Veterans UK Review. If you have any problems getting it to work, please contact the MESH helpline on 01273 391 447. And finally, if you would like your copy of Review in a different format, then please contact your community support worker or Rovi for more information.